9. Martha had said that in the 21st verse, and some of them still say it in the 37th verse. Some of them said, if he had been here, this man wouldn't die. But he made a way of purpose for the guy to die, so he could raise him up. All right. Didn't seem to comprehend that. And that's why Jesus wept. Their silly hardness of heart and incompetence to understand plain facts. That's what made him weep. He didn't weep because Lazarus was dead. It doesn't say that. Right now, notice what it says then. 33rd verse. Jesus, therefore, when he saw her weeping and the Jews also weeping, which came, why were they weeping? Because they were saying, if you'd have been here, you wouldn't die. That's why they were weeping. They thought there was no hope now. If he'd have been here before he died, he wouldn't die. But there's no hope now. We would cry. You see? All right. And then Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews weeping, which came with her. He groaned in spirit. He groaned in spirit and was troubled. Now, let me look to make sure. I don't think there's an article before the word spirit there. If it does, then it's translated as his spirit. It would be an article used as a pronoun. And not talking about the Holy Spirit. He groaned in his spirit. Yes, an article uses a pronoun. Your interlinear even puts it, his spirit. He has a human spirit. This is not talking about his divine essence. The divine essence would never be used. He had a spirit. He had a spirit. Now, if you compare what the spirit is, man has to have a spirit. 1 Corinthians 2:11 is the key verse on the human spirit. It tells you how we're like God, by the way. It doesn't say it in this verse, but it does. This is the reason man is like God. He's a rational creature. He has reason. In 1 Corinthians 2:11, and again, let me correct this because you don't get the full import. The word man is found plural one place and then singular, and they've just translated it man, you see, and you don't see that. Now, here's the way, who from among mankind knows the things of an individual man? Who from among mankind knows the things of an individual man except the spirit of that individual man which is in him? Now that's true, you see, we're all human beings, but you don't know what's going on in my head. Only I know what's going on in my head, and sometimes I'm not sure. All right? And that's what this is saying, you see. Now the argument is, if only I can know what's going on in my head, my spirit, then the only way I can know what's going on in deity is if I have the spirit of God. That's his argument. That's why he's bringing that in. But it gives us a lot of information. The rational part of man, where he knows about himself, is the human spirit. You see? That's what it's saying. So it gives you a lot of information in asking and arguing. All the argument here, Paul is saying, the Spirit searches the deep things of God. Now, how are you going to know the deep things of God when you can't even know the things of another man? Only the spirit of man in him knows. Well, you've got to have the spirit of God. Then you know what's going on in God. All right? That's what he's talking about. All right, so see, the spirit is the rational part of man, and Christ had a spirit. Now, in Luke 23, you also have him having spoken about his spirit, or the spirit, and in Luke 23:46, you have a statement made about the fact of him having a spirit. This is talking about his spirit. Luke 23:46. And notice, this is when he died at that point. And it says, and when Jesus cried with a loud voice, he said, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And he expired, and he voluntarily died. He voluntarily expired. And so you have, let me get it here, 23:46. The word ghost there is not a good translation. All right? He expired. He breathed out. He expired. He died. This is the word expire used in the sense of dying. And so he says, into thy hands I commend my spirit. That's his human spirit. If he didn't have a spirit, he couldn't commend it into the hands of the Father. And he breathed out. He gave up voluntarily his life. He died voluntarily, say. And if you have a margin there, I do, it says that he voluntarily did this. This was something that he had control over. All right, and so he gave up the ghost there in the translation as he expired. He breathed out. That's what expire means. Let's see. when you breathe out the last breath that you're going to breathe. You know what that means, all right? That's the synonym for death. And so he had a spirit to commend to the Father, and this was his human spirit. Now in Luke 2 again, reminding you of those verses dealing with the fact of his growing up, again it tells you he grew in spirit, his human spirit. That's the rational features of his mind. He learned to reason better. He learned to use his rationale better. And so in the 40th verse, the child grew. This is talking about his physical growth, and he waxed strong in spirit. Now the reason it really tells you that, let's look how strong he waxed in spirit. When he's 12 years old, notice in the 42nd verse, he can go down to the temple and he can reason with, hearing and asking question of the teachers, the doctors, the PhDs, and confound them. Now you see how strong he waxed in spirit? His reason got so strong that as a 12-year-old, he could confound doctors, PhDs, the teachers. All right, now notice, and it came to pass, after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing and asking them questions, and all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And a 12-year-old boy, sitting there with the brains of the nation Israel, and confounding them. That's why it says he waxed strong in spirit, you see. All right, now then down to the 52nd verse, and Jesus increased in wisdom. Wisdom is how you use what you understand. And stature, increased in wisdom. This is how you use your rationale. And stature, and in favor, in grace, really, grace, favor with God and man. And so here you have him growing, and it's telling you, in a sense, that he had a nice personality. How would a child, a young man, grow in favor or in grace with other men? Why would an older man take a young boy under his wing and show him how to do something, carve something? That's grace. Doesn't deserve it. It's a favor. Why would he do that? Because the kid's a nasty, dirty mouth, arrogant. No, he has to have a nice personality. He'd be a nice kid, you see. It gives you a little insight into his growing up. All you got to do is just look at it. All right, now. You have there, and then in John 19:30 again, he had a human spirit. John 19:30, and this deals with his death again from another point of view. And the word ghost here is not the word expire. The word ghost here is just the word spirit. And in 19:30 of John, it says, and again, you have the article that's used as a pronoun in case some of you are looking at your interlinear, and you'll notice your interlinear tells you that by putting his, the pronoun, in parentheses. You have the article used pronoun many times in Scripture. All right? And so it says, Jesus, after he had said, "It stands finished, tetelestai," he bowed his head and delivered up his spirit. Now again, it's voluntarily. He does it himself. Nobody took his spirit away from him. He did it himself. He died like no other man. He delivered up his spirit. You don't do that. It's taken away from you. All right? And so he did it himself. Now this is talking about him dying, because remember James, let's look at a verse in James 2. The mark of physical death, from James' point of view, is when the rational mind no longer is able to function and is separated from the body. Putting it in medical terms, when there's no longer any brain waves, there's no life in that body, even though they have it on a support system and pumping blood through the body, it is not alive. All right? And so in James 2, if you look at the 26th verse, and this just tells you why we're looking at spirit and what it's saying there and why it's saying that. For as the body, apart from a spirit, is dead. The body's dead when there's no spirit in it. That's what it says. You see? When the spirit's separated from the body dies. The spirit doesn't die. The body dies. And this is what is physical death according to Scripture. And I think it says the last word on it. So Christ had a human spirit. He had a human spirit, human knowledge, human spirit, human reasoning. He could think as man. He could think also as God. Now, somehow, it got left out. You should have the word soul down there. So put a C down at the bottom of the page, and we're going to see that he also had a soul. He also had a human soul. Now, the human soul, if you remember your anthropology or your study of the doctrine of man, the human soul is the seat of the emotions. It's that immaterial part of man that interprets the five senses to your mind. It's there where the animating principle of your physical life resides. The word soul is translated life numerous times, correctly so. And it should be translated that way in that verse where it says, what would it profit a man if he gained the whole world and lose his life? You don't lose your soul. If you're born into this world, you're born condemned, you don't have your soul to lose. You're already lost. You see? It's talking about life there. That should be translated life. All right? It's not a soul winner's verse saying that you're born into the world, and you've got your soul, now what are you going to do with it? You're going to lose it or you're going to get it saved? You don't got it to do either one with. That's utter nonsense, you see. If you believe that you were born depraved, born condemned, you didn't have a soul to lose. It was already lost. But you got a life to lose, and the minute you lose that life, that settles the question. You can't do any more about the soul and the spirit. So it should be life. What would it profit a man if he gained the whole world and lose his life? What should he give in place of his life? He can't give anything. His soul is already lost when he was born. All right? We need to get saved, and we do talk to children about getting saved. They're already lost. And they didn't have to wait till they gained the world to lose their soul. They were born that way. All right, we're just telling you that because that's what the soul is. The soul animates the physical life, is the animating principle of physical life. It's the seat of our emotions. It's that immaterial part of man that interprets my five senses to my mind. And that's the soul. It's the seat of the emotions. All right, now let's see if Christ had a human soul. Let's look back at Matthew, and we'll see that he did have a human soul. Look at the 26th chapter of Matthew and the 38th verse. This was in the Garden of Gethsemane where you had a highly emotional crisis. We'll look at that a little later and see what happened in the Garden of Gethsemane. The devil wasn't trying to kill him. And the Lord wasn't putting sins on him. It was an entirely different thing. All right? But he makes a statement there, and if you look at that situation, you remember it was a highly emotional situation. The 38th verse emphasizes that. Then he said unto them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto the point of physical death. And remember, the soul is the area of emotions, also the area that animates your physical life. And he's using it correctly here. So he had a soul that was highly emotional at this point. It was exceedingly, exceedingly sorrowful. And that's used correctly. He had a human soul, a human soul. In Luke, the 22nd chapter, you have the same thing, but it's just another occurrence. It's the same thing showing that in these two accounts, he does say the same thing. Sometimes when you have another account, they add some other words, he said, and leave out the first words that were put in the other. But these were so important that you have exactly the same words used in Luke 22, the account of the garden again. And you'll notice that he says again that his soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto the point of death. And it says being in agony. Let me see. This shows how much sorrow he had. I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. We're going to look at another verse where it says that. But notice this is another account showing how much agony he had back there when he said, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful unto death. In the 44th verse of the Luke account, the 22nd chapter, I got mixed up. I'm sorry, I made a mistake and said it just the opposite of what I should have said it. Sometimes when you have two accounts in the Gospels, it gives you some other things about this. It doesn't contradict it. It just gives you some other things. And so here, notice the 44th verse. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was as great drops of blood falling down to the earth. And when he rose up, and this is the time when he was there in the garden, this is when he said, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death. All right? And so he shows you how much sorrow he had, how deep the emotions were at that point in time. And this again contributes to the fact that he did have a soul. It's in Mark where you have the same statements as in Matthew. Mark 14, the garden, and you have him saying there about the soul again. This is Mark 14. And let me see if I got this all found up. Yes, it's in the 34th verse. Matthew and Mark say the same thing. Luke tells you some other details, how sorrowful he was, really sorrowful. He was in such agony, he was sweating drops of, seemed like blood. So you have it in Mark saying, in the 34th verse, and he said unto them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful unto death. You tarry here and watch. Right? He went away and prayed, and in being in deep agony, he prayed the more fervently, according to Luke, and he sweat drops as though it were blood. Notice it says, like blood. That would be because of the phenomenon involved. All right, and so he has a soul, a human soul. And that's why he could die physically. His human spirit, his human soul would leave his body. Now, those three things make up a human nature, you see. A human body, with all of its attributes. Attributes are its abilities. What's the abilities of a human body? Well, hear them out. Spirit, he had a human spirit and a human soul. So he had a human nature. And we already read three verses telling you he had a human nature, just saying that. That's John 1:14, Romans 9:5, and 1 Timothy 2:5. All of those said he had a human nature. Now we've spelled it out. What is his human nature? His body, soul, and spirit. So he had a real human nature. Now, it was that human nature that was born of Mary, and if he, as I said again, that was a thing. Mary did not mother the person of the Son of God. He already was in existence, wasn't he? We've seen him. Right? You Roman Catholics are wrong there. Mary is not the mother of the Son of God. Mary is the mother of a thing, the humanity of God the Son. God the Son existed before Mary ever breathed. So how could she mother it? She didn't. She mothered a thing which he took, a human nature, which would have been impersonal if he hadn't have taken it. Now, I just showed you one verse where it called that thing that Mary had, called it one. I'll show you another verse where it also calls it a thing. And it's quite definite in the original. It uses the neuter, and you can see it immediately, a thing. So Mary was the mother of the humanity of the God-man. She did not mother the God-man. God made her. Right? Now be careful there, because you're Roman Catholics, you see, they'll say, and they use a term back in church history, Theotokos. Theotokos means Mary is the mother of God. Theotokos. Nope. She's the mother of a thing which God the Son took and made it human, made it have a personality, made it have direction, made it will things. All right? Now that gives you an idea. Now you see why we spend so much time showing you God the Son was doing things before he ever came to earth to be born of Mary. Existed. So she couldn't mother that Son. He already was here. He already was called the Son. And I'll show you some verses next time showing you God, when God sent him forth, when he came, he was already the Son up there. Didn't become the Son by coming down here. He was the Son up there. All right? This, we thank thee for your goodness. We're thankful for the amount of information. Is this enough to really understand who the God-man is and why he's the God-man and who he is as our